The U.S. presidential election of 1916. Of course, this is the election just before the United States enters World War I. Now, we have a seated president, which is Woodrow Wilson, who is a Democrat. So, when the Democrats meet in June of 1916 at St. Louis, obviously Wilson is elected on the first ballot, 1,092-1. Okay, and I think the one, I don't have the name of the one delegate, but the one delegate was mad because he wasn't doing enough for the war effort. You know, he's trying to keep us neutral. And they also renominated his vice president, which is Vice President Marshall. Now, Vice President Marshall is an interesting character because in American history, he gives us a famous quote about the vice presidency. He said, "What this country needs is a really good 5-cent cigar." Now, years later, during the Depression, Ed Wynn, a comedian, will make the comment that what this country needs is a good 5-cent nickel. So frequently, Marshall's comment is mistaken for the American comedians. He also told a joke while he was vice president. It goes like this. He says, two brothers are born and they live, and then one runs off to sea, and the other is elected vice president. Neither is ever heard from again. So he's all, here's a guy who has a job, and it's like, oh, you know, there's nothing that's going to happen here. All right, the platform for the Democrats is going to be, you know, their number one part of the platform is military preparedness. You know, they want the United States military to be prepared. Now, the United States Navy is in pretty good condition. Actually, the United States Navy is, from a tonnage standpoint, is larger than the French Navy at this time. But the Army's terrible because we don't have, you know, real federal forces. We use militias, National Guards, or militias. You know, they're both, it's the same thing. You can interchange the term. One of the first American divisions in World War I is the famous Rainbow Division, which is made up of the best units of the various National Guards in the United States. The second thing, and I find this really fascinating, is the second platform talks about the need for a World Association of Nations. And this Association of Nations is to have three goals. One is to secure peace, one is to maintain national rights, and one is to protect individual rights. So here we see this League of Nations, if you will, popping up in the platform of the Democratic Party. Talks about Pan-American unity. He wants to set up a retirement system for the federal employees. They want to ban child labor. They want a federal bureau of safety. They are in favor of women's suffrage, or allowing the women the right to vote. They want prison reform. And they want federal tuberculosis sanitariums to be built for the poor. Now, there's a significant amount of tuberculosis worldwide. And in the United States, it may be 5 or 6% of the population. Now, after 1918, there are a lot of tubercular patients are no longer here because the influenza of 1918 hit the TB population very hard because the flu virus of that time would go into the holes in the lungs of the patients that had TB and reproduce there. And so they had a much higher rate. Tuberculosis rates just plummeted after the flu of 1918. Now, of course, Wilson is a seated president, so the main thing that they're going to talk about is, of course, the famous slogan of 1916, which is, he kept us out of war. Now, the Republicans will also meet in the same month, 1916, which is June, and they're going to be in Chicago. There are three people vying for the opportunity to run against Wilson. One is Supreme Court Justice Hughes, John Weeks of Massachusetts, and Elihu Root of New York. And eventually, it takes three ballots, but Charles Evans Hughes wins on the third ballot. Now, one of the problems you have with Hughes is he's been on the Supreme Court for 6 years. So he hasn't made any public comments about anything in the government or whatever during that 6-year period of time. So we really have someone that no one really knows where he stands on various issues. Now, Charles Fairbanks of Indiana is then selected as the vice president. Now, as far as the platform, there's a lot of similarities. But, of course, the first part of the platform is to condemn Wilson for failing to protect U.S. interests overseas. You know, they don't have a war plank, but they're complaining that he's not protecting us enough. I don't think Wilson could do more. Wilson is, you know, the Lusitania incident brought a lot of pressure on him. I mean, and even when he writes what most people, if you read the original response of Wilson that's telegraphed to the German embassy, it doesn't seem like that, you know, it seems pretty tepid. But it was considerably, it was too much for his Secretary of State, which is William Jennings Bryan, who said, well, this is the equivalent of, we're going to go to war now, I resign. So he can't really win. I mean, he does a great job trying to keep us out of the war as long as he possibly can. But he gets a lot of criticism. Another part of this, he talks about the second plank, is they want a strict and honest neutrality. Well, you know, just exactly what are we talking about here is neutrality. This is World War One. Belgium was as neutral as you could possibly be, and they were run over. Now, Wilson in 1916, before the election, before the nomination process, had made a very interesting comment in a speech that he gave to the Women's Club of Cincinnati, Ohio, on October the 20th. Actually, this is during the presidential election. On October the 26th, and in it he makes the statement, quote, I believe that the business of neutrality is over. Not because I want it to be over, but I mean this, that war now has such a scale that the position of neutral sooner or later becomes intolerable. So you see Wilson beginning to maneuver away. Well, that brings up another topic, just exactly what is American neutrality. Now, the American neutrality has, you would be surprised, has not been updated that many times prior to 1916. The original act is from 1794, and that was renewed then in 1797, and then updated again in 1818. And that was still in force going into 1915. Now, the 1818 neutrality law does the following. Number one, no citizen of the United States shall accept a commission against a friendly state. Number two, that no person shall within the United States enlist for service against a friendly state or obtain another to do so. Number three, that no person shall within the United States fit out and arm or procure to be fitted out and armed or augment the armament of any vessel meant to cruise against a friendly state. Number four, that no person shall within the United States begin or set foot on any military enterprise against a friendly state. Besides its punitive provisions, the Act offers large powers to the president to anticipate and prevent its violation, and it also allows for the collection of customs to be authorized to detain any vessel built for warlike purposes and about to depart the United States with munitions and men on board for probable service against a friendly state. Now, the definition of a friendly state is if the United States is trading with you, that's a friendly state. As long as we're not being attacked, it's considered a friendly state, which is why we were getting into trouble in the War of 1812, because England was a friendly state to us, and France was a friendly state to us. They just weren't friendly to each other. We don't care what's happening to each other as long as they're treating us right. So when the Lusitania is sunk, it's not an American ship, but there are American citizens on board. So therefore, we expect an apology. And, you know, that's how it operates. To some extent, we are neutral. So during the early parts of World War One, there, as long as we weren't attacked, the United States did not have an official policy saying that Germany's bad, Turkey's bad, they're all friendly states in relationship to the United States. The people might not have liked it. Businesses could have done their own thing. But, you know, you weren't supposed to send troops to fight friendly states, but to some extent, the guys who are in the Lafayette Escadrille, they weren't fighting. Actually, they were fighting a friendly state because Germany wasn't considered bad officially at this point. Now, they then update it. They finally update the resolution in March the 4th, 1915. And in this case, the president is further empowered to prevent clearance of any vessel, American or foreign, which has reasonable cause to believe to be about to carry fuel, arms, ammunition, men, or supplies to any warship or tender or supply ship of a belligerent nation. Now we have a different situation here. This means that you could stop sending those items, arms, fuel, ammunition, men, and supplies, to any country that was fighting, if you want to classify belligerent. That's the president's call. So obviously the Germans aren't going to get anything, but the Allies might still be able to get some. So, you know, there's a real mess. The neutrality laws prior to the 1930s are a little bit different than you have the very restrictive in the 1930s. So that's what the neutrality is up to this particular point. Now, the Republicans, they don't want to create a League of Nations. They want a world court. Now, the other things is they want to restore friendly ties with Mexico. Of course, Mexico's having a civil war at this time. And some of the rebels are raiding the southern part of the United States, the southwestern part of the United States, but that's another issue all in itself. They want to keep the Philippines. The Democrats didn't say anything about that. Stronger national defense. They want the women to vote too. Higher tariffs, higher taxes on imports, workmen's compensation, and they also want to ban child labor. The war is the only issue, and Wilson kept us out of it. However, there's large numbers of people who are very much against Wilson, think he's making a mistake by not involving us in the war. Teddy Roosevelt would be right at the top of that particular group. There are people who believe that we could stay out of the war, but he could be more aggressive in protecting the way American interests are being dealt with, particularly with the periodic submarine sinkings of American ships, which have been happening. And other things. There's some espionage cases in the United States. And quite frankly, Wilson was not favored to win the election. Most people believe that Hughes would win the election. Now, Wilson's support comes basically from labor, the organized labor part. However, Hughes receives Teddy Roosevelt's support. And that, of course, brings a great number of progressives. And then the Catholics get on board because of the treatment of Mexico, which is a Catholic, mostly Catholic country. All right. And in the end, the election is settled by the state of California, the last state to come in to vote once the polls are closed. Wilson has 9,129,606 votes, which is 49%. Hughes has 8,538,221, which is 46%. We've still got some socialists and some other groups drawing off some percentages. But in the electoral vote is 277 to 254. If California votes for Hughes, Hughes is president. That's the difference. And so, you know, Wilson goes on to his second term, and very shortly, you know, in April of 1917, the United States will enter the war. Now, Hughes does okay. Later on, Hughes is, of course, the U.S. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court from 1930 to 1941, and he has an illustrious career. So now, as far as sources on this, this is the same old material that I have been talking about before, the same groups, and that is the books by Bowler, the Complete Book of Presidents by DiGregorio, the Rutledge Historical Atlas of Presidential Elections. And then as far as Woodrow Wilson's biography, there's a really good one by Walworth. It's two volumes. It's Woodrow Wilson, American Prophet. And then the second volume is Woodrow Wilson, World Prophet. Again, it's Walworth, W-O-U-T-H. So I hope you enjoyed that. And again, don't forget to come by the website at summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and leave a comment, ask a question, and thank you very much.